As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Mighty Manfred with you once more on our coolest conversations in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. Joining me today is Dave Sardi, noted producer and musician. He's worked with the likes of Oasis, The Hives, Tegan and Sara, as well as the Rolling Stones, and most recently, The Who. He produced their latest album, their self-titled release, which is their 12th full-length studio offering. And it features this week's coolest song in the world, All This Music Must Fade. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Dave Sardi on your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I don't care. I know you're gonna hate this song. But that said, we never really got along. It's not new, not diverse. It won't lie to be a parade. It's just simple verse. All its music will.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and today I'm speaking with Dave Sardi, noted composer, musician, songwriter, and record producer. Over the course of his career, he's worked with all sorts of artists, including quite a number of groups that we feature here in the Underground Garage, like Jet, Oasis, Mooney Suzuki, Rolling Stones, Primal Scream, Tegan and Sara, The Shelters, and The Hives, as well as The Who, whose song, All This Music Must Fade, is this week's coolest song in the world. Hey, Dave, how are you?
What's happening, man? I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Very happy to be chatting with you. Now listen, Dave, your band Bark Market was on Triple X Records.
And when I was going back.
Right. Okay. And when I realized that, I called my buddy here in town in Los Angeles, Bruce Duff. Do you know Bruce?
I sure do.
Okay. So I called Bruce because I knew he worked for Triple X, and I said, Bark Market, Dave Sardi. And he said, musical genius, musical genius.
That's a nice guy to say that.
Right. Well, he followed that up with saying that you guys got signed away from Triple X or left Triple X to go to Rick Rubin's labels. And Bruce's contention was that not only did Rick Rubin want the band, Bark Market, but specifically he wanted you to be working production duties for him for his different projects. Any truth to that?
I think it's 100% true. Rick is he's a genius, and he's also got a great ear for studio talent, and I think that was part of it. You know, I think he liked the music, but yeah, for sure. I mean, we started making records together. We didn't do that many, but we made a few fun records together. And I was just talking about him a minute ago. I'm working on a new record for Band of Horses right now. We were just literally 5 minutes ago talking about Rick. So he's in the firmament.
So how was Ruben aware of your production abilities?
Well, he, you know, at that point, making records, you know, before, back in the way, way back machine, before computers were involved in making records, getting, as you probably remember, making records sound cool and messed up and interesting and kind of in your face was a bit of a trick, and you had to learn how to work with equipment in the recording studio and find every trick possible to make something kind of leap out of the speakers. And I was always a fan, as probably a bunch of people involved with your show and your station, which is why I listened to it. I was always a fan of how some records sounded. You know, why did the Stones record have so much vibe and then another record from that same year didn't? Or, you know, why is it that when this band went into the studio, it was a terrible record, it just had no energy, and then the record before was so much more exciting? And so I became sort of a fanatic about trying to figure out, how do you make things sound exciting and fun in the studio? How do I capture that feeling of what it feels like to be in a room with a bunch of musicians playing way too loud and everyone sweating and freaking out? And that is the the feeling you get when you hear the music, and other times it just sounds like a bunch of wet noodles being played by a machine. So that became what I was obsessed with recording-wise, and I think Rick picked up on that with my records with my band, just because it was a sort of approach of whatever means necessary. You know, if you had a $1 mic or a $20,000 mic or a 4-track tape machine or whatever you could find and however you could get a sound, that was the way to do it. So we spent a lot of time experimenting, and I think Rick picked up on that.
So is it fair to say, as Rick picked up on that and he's given you these projects, did that get you moving away from being in a band to just working with bands as a producer? Or
no, I mean, I was always doing both. When I wasn't on tour, I was making records with other bands that were also on tour with my band. So it was sort of just going around the world and playing all over the place. You just meet a lot of people, as you know. And I got a lot of people who said, your record sounds cool, you want to do my record? And it was always like, yeah, I got a month off the road in August, you want to do it then? I was sort of always making records for other people, just because, you know, getting paid to do something that you loved is a privilege. So I took that privilege whenever I could. Still do.
Oh, amen. Well, were you like a big Who fan in your youth or your teens?
I don't even know if you could say fan. It's more of like, I mean, it's working with a band like the Who is such an interesting one. I mean, it was a similar feeling to me working with Johnny Cash, with Rick, actually, oddly, was that you're working with people who are sort of part of the pillars of what you just assume is music.
Right.
And yeah, of course, I was a fan. I mean, I don't think I even really thought about how much Pete's guitar playing was an influence on my approach to guitar until I sat down to think about it as a producer and sitting with him and watching him play it, listening to it, and sort of putting the microscope on. When I started putting the mic, I mean, I wouldn't have ever had the balls to sit down and go, now I'm going to listen to a Who record and think about how I would produce this. It's like, I would never have done, I listened to it as a fan. So sitting down to think about working with Pete as a producer or helping make a record, whatever, it was pretty fun to do a deep dive into their entire musical history and also influences, because I think working with a band, whatever musician you're working with, whatever era they're coming from or however old they are, you have to kind of make your references appropriate. Either you're turning them on to music, as you guys do every day on the radio, or you're kind of having common references. So the references with Pete and Roger are about, you know, 10-year, like, they would be a reference to me with a band that I work with. So who do we reference with them? So I have to reference their musical influences. So I went back 10 years, 15 years before them to sort of have conversations about music that were based on what their references are rather than on, you know, them. Well, I'm not going to reference their record to them, you know?
Well, and here's something tying in what you were saying earlier about, you know, you hear a record from an artist from a certain area, a certain time, and it sounds really incredible, and then other records from that same year, it could sound terrible, or the next record from that band just doesn't capture the same excitement, same vim and vigor, and, you know, what are the reasons for all that? So with a Who, you know, my generation is often referred to as being, you know, the best sounding Who record, the one that Shel Talmy worked on as a producer. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I'm a fan of Shel and his recording style, and use, without a doubt, tried to make records sound like that. That is one of my, I mean, I'm a fan of recording basically from about, you know, all of recording, but I think the recording had a high period between 1950 and 1970, in my opinion. And like, he's kind of one of the high points of like managing to make things jump out of the speaker. So yeah, I also think some of their, you know, a lot of the other records that they made are amazing sounding. I think Who's Next is incredible. Quadrophenia. Wow. I mean, they're different. I mean, the Who, in a lot of ways, like Pink Floyd or like the Beatles, they had eras, they had epochs where they were into different things and trying to get different places with their music. So I think, like with any great artist, whether it's a painter, a filmmaker, writer, musician, if they're not having eras, they're not growing, they're not really a fully-fledged artist, they're just trying to be a commercial success. And I think the Who have always sort of been artists. So that means they're inherently going to be taking chances and trying to not just make the same record over and over again.
Right.
So, I mean, down to this day, down to this record, down to trying to make an impactful record at where they're at now about who they are now. So
how did you land this gig?
It was like a send away a box top and just one. No, it was, I have no idea. They reached out to me, honestly, probably making like the couple of the artists that you mentioned earlier, a couple of the bands I've worked with, Oasis. Yeah. I know Pete is an Oasis fan and is friends with Noel, and you know, Noel and I have been friends since started to work with Oasis and working on Noel's solo stuff. And we actually have a new track about to come out. That's pretty amazing. Maybe from that. I don't know. The A&R guy also, you'd have to ask him why he reached out to me.
Well, I read online that the new album was recorded between February and August of this year overseas. Now, were you present there for those sessions? Did you?
Yeah.
11 official tracks, several more bonus cuts. Were there more songs recorded than that?
There was a lot of material in contention for the record. And I think everything that Pete and everyone thought was worth putting on this, you know, that was sort of not worth, but like sort of felt like it was ready, got put on the record. I think there's a sort of a juggernaut timeline when you're making a record with a band like this. Record sort of has to hit a certain mark to get out to match everything else that's happening. We did a few things we recorded a bunch of times and multiple versions. I mean, with someone like Pete, who's, you know, a consummate recording artist, it's not necessarily just one take done and then, you know, print it, we're out of here. So you have to sort of live with things and take them up the hill and get them to be as amazing as they can be. And he's also got about 6,000 other things he's working on.
Well, part of a producer's skill, you know, when you're working with groups, is navigating all the personalities, and here also dealing with rock legends. How difficult was it to thread the needle?
Well, it's threaded. I mean, they invented everything. But, you know, that generation of musician invented all the ideas we have about what it means to be an artist, a rock star, a legend. I mean, they came up with it. So I'll just say that it's they're authentic in all things. They're all incredibly lovely people, you know, standing at the top of a mountain that they built, and they have every right to look out over the world and see it how they want to see it. That's sort of normal. And I think that the personality, it's no different than working with, you know, the amazing thing about making records with artists is it's no different for a band making their first record that no one knows, or making a gigantic record that for the band that everyone knows. It's sort of the same process, a lot of the same drives and motivations and pitfalls. And I mean, I think it makes it easy to do the job on some level, is if you've got experience with that is the job. I mean, anyone can say that's a great song, that's not a great song. I mean, you get good at it over time, but figuring out how to get things over the line and finish them and make them great with everyone involved is sort of the key, I think.
Well, let's focus a little here on our coolest song of the week, All This Music Must Fade. What was the session for that song like? Did you have any arrangement ideas or suggestions? Did they use any, or how'd the song come together?
I mean, Pete writes the songs and the lyrics and sings them, so the first thing you're going to get from Pete is a fully realized song. Yeah. So anything you want to change in that, you're going to be up against trying to convince Pete that something needs to change. So, I mean, from my point of view, the trick was just getting the feel of the track right. Mm-hmm. And getting the rhythm section sort of working against Pete, because in my mind, that's one of the drivers in the classic Who, is when the rhythm section is working against his songwriting and mm-hmm. sort of having a I don't care attitude about their, you know, the parts, because yeah. they were all mates. It wasn't like they were all employees of him on some level. And I think that they brought a lot to the table that made part of what the Who sound was that tension.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what I think probably I brought to it, was creating tension, which you can only imagine how that went down.
You mentioned these guys being up on the mountain and sort of representing what we think of as recording artistry. At the same time, did they have any sort of studio tricks that you weren't familiar with when you got into the studio with them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pete, the great thing about making records that's sort of like going to school. It's a dying art on some level, because mm-hmm. it's available. It's sort of like high-end photo retouching or, you know, printing museum quality photographs or lithography. It's an art form that was a very deeply thought through, trained for job that now is available on your phone. So Pete came up at a time way before me. I mean, I came up through punk rock, so for me it was all, my generation is like, can we make a record in a bathroom with a cassette 4-track, and can we convince people that that's exciting enough to put out? And he came up with the BBC and working at the Radiophonic, you know. I mean, he got to be there for the penultimate version of recording with the most talented, most amazing studios on the planet, and working all of them. That's the great thing about work. It was one of the many great things about working with him, is him just dropping his, you know, pearls of wisdom, like, oh, do you know they used to record claps at the BBC? No, please tell. And we just drop through some little, you know. And the other thing about Pete that's amazing, that I think probably realized, but I just certainly didn't realize the extent of what a polymath he is. I mean, he's an unbelievable engineer, programmer, musician, composer, editor, engineer, scientist, deeply, I mean, you know, he could fix the tech problems on the computer, the desk, rewire the speakers, rebuild the speaker and redesign them, also writing the song. And he also does not suffer fools. Kind of have to bring your A game.
I hear that. Well, that on your end, was it possible to teach an old dog a new trick?
Oh, hell no. I mean, if anything, all you're trying to do is get him to be in to enjoy what he's doing and like what he hears coming back. I don't know what I have to teach Pete at all. Just watching some of the ways he shapes his chords is kind of incredible. He's got all sorts of things that he does that I would have never thought to, oh, that's why that sounds like that. You could always, unless you sat and watched, you know, took pictures of his fingers, you might think, oh, that's just the sound of the amp or the sound of the guitar. And it's the voicing of his chord. So he's such a composer. He plays guitar like a composer, and he's an iconoclast and a stylist. It's sort of fun to just watch him do his thing, honestly.
Well, you mixed that Rolling Stones song, Rough Justice. You produced The Who's new album. Now that you've worked with The Who...
Give me the Beatles tracks next, man. Come on,
yeah, so I was going to say, is it on to Sir Paul?
I'd love to. I'm a huge fan. I mean, the Beatles and The Who and The Stones are the reason why I picked up a guitar. I mean, when I was old enough to realize what I wanted to do was burn all guitars in all studios, that was the adult choice. But as a kid, it was all about, you know, those bands. That's why I got into it in the first place. So, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's finding people and artists. You guys do a really good job of finding all the greatest new things that are out there and playing them. And I just have to say thank you for that, because I hear a lot of great music on your guys' station.
You're certainly welcome, Dave, and thanks for working with those artists as well. I was thinking that the Hives, Tegan and Sarah, a lot of bands that you've worked with, you're mixing songs. Now, when someone contacts you to deal with a song or mix a song, do you have much of a connection to the band as a whole, or who are you dealing with primarily?
It's different on every case, and also, you know, mixing. I mean, I kind of sort of said at the beginning, I'm not much of an engineer, although I have huge respect for engineers. So when I mix, I sort of try and mix like a producer. So oftentimes I'll do things that a mixer that maybe I shouldn't do, or I'll say, hey, I had an idea about this and turning off all the instruments here, and it seems like it gets, you know, I'm getting tired of, can we try this? And I'll send an idea, and sometimes people are horrified and offended, and other times they're ecstatic. And it just depends on the artist and who you're dealing with and what the goals are for the track and at what point they are with the track, if they have a specific vision for how it should go. Like when I produce a record, in my mind, the mix should be a balancing session. You just put up the faders and it should sound like the record. The rough mix should be the album, that kind of a thing.
Right.
But I think a lot of people, or sometimes people get into an idea of that we should record everything and then somehow figure it out later. I'd rather just have four things to mix. So I sort of approach things that way.
Did I hear you right? You were saying you don't consider yourself to be an engineer, or?
Not really. No, I mean, I know engineers who are great. I always work, when I produce a band, I always work with an engineer, because I don't sort of want to sit and look at meters. I want to listen to the music and hear the performances. So yeah, I always work with an engineer.
We've only got time to play another track, just one track off the new album, and I wanted us to take a listen to Break the News. My notes say that Pete's younger brother Simon wrote that. Far and away, you know, Peter is the guitarist of this band's songwriter. Was there a different dynamic with recording this one as opposed to the others?
No, I mean, I think it got consideration because it's a really cool track, and yeah. Pete was incredibly open and gracious. I mean, I think they have Simon's amazing. If you've seen them live, Simon's fantastic on tour and just does a really yeoman's job of just playing perfectly and on the spot in whatever song needs in whatever moment. I think he's a really great musician in his own right. I can't imagine what it's like to have, you know, your older brother is Pete Townsend and then also be a musician, and he's an incredible musician too. I mean, so I think it's a great song, and I think that's kind of why it got consideration, and kudos to Pete for being open to it and recognizing the track, you know.
Absolutely. Well, David, thank you so much for talking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Yeah, man, great to meet you. Keep up the good work.
Will do. Right now, here's Break the News from The Who, Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I will always be the one to break the news if it's all right. I never want to bring you down, no. I will always be the one to speak the truth if it don't hurt. I never want to see you frown, no. We're laying in. I'm so happy.
it's raining out again. I'm so made up that we're naked in our bed, like we were 24 back when. Who will hammer out the deeper question needing sorting out?
That was New Who here in Little Steven's Underground Garage with Break the News. Track written by Simon Townsend, Pete's younger brother. He also plays in the band. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to producer Dave Sardi for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our segment. Join me next week when I'll be chatting with Dangerous Dave Feldman, lead singer and frontman for New York City's Wildlife. They've got a new Christmas single out, and we'll talk about that and Dave's holiday wish list. That's your next week's Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.